Someone recently suggested that the state of Christianity in the present world is very much like the third century church. The third century church that grew out of the apostles' time was a church that was floundering on many issues, where there were heresies rampant, a lot of dissent in the ranks, so to speak, a lot of unrest, and there was absolute persecution going on so many levels. Theologically, there was a lot of confusion, and there were a lot of changes because culturally, Greece and Rome had collided in the Middle East, and things were stirred up dramatically, which brought about the beginning of Western civilization. But as a result, the church that we have come to know was formed back then in that crucible, and for many centuries we have continued on that road. Being back in the third century brings us, in my mind, to where we are today in terms of the clashes of different religious teachings, the politics and the unrest in the political world, a lot of the disparity between wealth and poverty, and questions of justice that prevail across the world. And so this morning's gospel, I think, is very fitting because it talks about Jesus projecting out in his time what will come. And he speaks about the destruction of the temple, which, as a matter of fact, shortly after his death, that did take place. In fact, by the time the first gospel is written, which is Mark, they were on the cusp of that dramatic event that changed the whole face of the teaching of Jesus right on down to today. And so please listen to the gospel from Mark chapter 13. As he came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see all these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." And when he was sitting opposite the temple on the Mount of Olives, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us when this will be, and what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" And he said to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs." The Gospel of the Lord. I probably set an ominous tone for the rest of what I'm going to say, but trust me, it's not that ominous. Christianity has existed for a long time, 2,000 years. And it's gone through many, many different changes, obviously has many, many different branches, a lot of different interpretations. Things have become even more dramatic because we live in a very highly technological society. In fact, I'm thinking about two generations from now and looking at my grandchildren. When their grandchildren are around, I wonder what the church will be like. First of all, there's going to be a lot of things happening. They're happening right now. There are a lot of people who no longer go to church. That's one statement that no one can deny because denominationally across the world, denominations are faltering and churches are closing. There are no people going into ministry, and those who are going into ministry are going into ministries very differently than we did. In fact, it has been said that the model of the 1950s, which is part of what we still do, of coming to church on Sunday, of having a church family, of doing worship and ritual and sacraments, that is really a model that no longer speaks to a lot of people. In fact, the majority of people in the world today consider themselves, the vast majority of people who have been polled consider themselves to be what they call nones, N-O-N-E-S. They They don't belong to any denomination. They have a belief in God. They don't take anybody's interpretation of scripture or whatever happens to be the foundation of a given religion. But their faith, they live out every day the best they can, and they don't worry about anything. They don't gather for worship because it is meaningless, because worship has become basically an extension of an 80-year-old process of gathering people, singing words we don't understand, mumbling lots of prayers and words that we do all the time, and walking away feeling totally unchanged or untouched. It's very interesting when you read some of the things that are happening around the world to talk about the future of this church. Think about the future of this church. We are a small microcosm of people. We all have some connection with one another, and that's what sustains us. It's our belonging to each other and caring about each other and being willing together to reach out beyond our own group, around our own church, to help and foster and support brothers and sisters outside of here and around the world. And that works for us. It doesn't work for most people. Most people today, especially younger people, and that's where our future is. When all of this stuff takes place, by the way, most of us aren't going to be here. Not most of us. Some of you will still be here, but I certainly won't. But coming and planning ahead and looking ahead, we are raising people with a technology that allows them to get instantaneous, immediate response to questions, to searches of any kind all around the world. Everything is at their fingertips, and it's on a little phone or a tablet or a computer. Now, our grandchildren came out of the womb banging on the keyboard. I had them banging on the keyboard when he was old enough to bang. And he learned the connection between banging on the keyboard and seeing something happen. They're whizzes at computer stuff. They are no longer confined by textbooks or hard copies or any of those things. They can go beyond their own teachers and explore on their own the realities that they're interested in. And it's all available to them immediately. Translate that over into God. How do you get an instantaneous something about God? How are we going to bridge that reality? The interesting thing is, they're saying in the future, by the way, there's a reflection book that came out of Yale Divinity School just recently. They published quarterly a kind of a review thing. And this one happened to be right on this subject, and I've been studying this for a while. But this came in this last week. And very interestingly, divided up into all different compartments, they respond to the call of the future. And they're suggesting what it's going to be like. One of the big shifts, we've already seen it in Pope Francis, who dared to say, and these words just burned when he said them, the church should be less about orthodoxy and more about practice. Forget about the theories, forget about the dogmas. Stop worrying about the dogmas and all the moral issues and start dealing with people. That's a powerful statement from the head of a church that has spent 2,000 years ensuring that it continues in a continuum that is true and faithful to all the dogmas and all the doctrines that have been proclaimed over the centuries. If the Pope has that kind of vision and has the courage to stand in front of the whole Catholic world and say, stop focusing on all those things and start focusing on people. There's earthquakes taking place, folks. And it's not only in the Catholic Church, because what's going to happen in our churches that are going to be different is doctrine is not going to matter a whole lot. What's going to matter is a person's individual faith. And how are we as a church going to accommodate all the different faith experiences that happen to come into the doors? How do we take a belief system that allows everyone to believe whatever he or she is experiencing of God and bring it all together? Unless we learn to dialogue with each other, unless we learn to be open to other things, unless we ourselves are willing to let go of what we've held on to for all these years as the sacred and decide that the sacred is much broader than we ever experienced before or whatever's allowed to us to experience before, we're not going to be able to welcome these people. They will not find a welcome here unless each person has the ability to live his or her faith in a community where everyone is free to do so. Gone are the days, even in Catholicism, where there's going to be one definition about what communion is. The third century battled that argument and came out with a very strong definition that has separated Christianity, fractured it again and again and again. The real presence of God in Eucharist and whatever else you hope and hold it to be. That conflict divided Christianity and has never, ever, ever healed that rift. What is it going to be when someone sitting next to you believes that this is really the body, the presence of God allowed in my hand to be consumed, to become part of my personhood and a part of my whole way of life, versus someone who sees it as something totally different, as maybe a symbol of something, as a sign of something, or as a young man that I knew some time ago said, isn't this a wonderful church, when he came to our church in Madison. They even have a snack in the middle of the service. What is it going to be like? How are we going to present and preserve what we hold so dear? Are we all going to have to concede to something much less, to something more watered down, or something not quite as lofty perhaps as we think God should be? What's going to happen with our education? Religious education now is really based on Bible. The interesting thing about the Bible and technology is most people don't read books anymore like this. They read tablets, or they read their phones, or they read their computers. The sad part about that, even though that is very convenient, and you can get the whole Bible on your phone and conveniently, anytime you want, pick it up and read it. The difficulty is that you have no boundaries when you're reading something on a computer or on an iPhone because you don't know where the end is. You don't know how long it's going to be. You don't know where one thing ends and another begins. You don't necessarily know that there are sections in here in the Bible, rather, that are very, very important to know. If you read everything with the same understanding that this is all front page news, when you get down to God destroying nations in order to give Israel a land, or when you find God working with the enemy to destroy Israel because they're being unfaithful, you're going to have a hard time figuring out what exactly is this all about. And when you get down to reading the prophets, and you start reading some of the outrageous things that prophets said about justice and how you affect justice, destroy all your rituals, get rid of all these things you call sacred, and start worrying about the poor people. How does one hear that and translate that into behavior? That's where ISIS came from. Taking something out of context and deciding on your own what it means can be very, very dangerous. And there are no Bible studies. People don't necessarily want to have a Bible study. In fact, many people, when they come to study a Bible, come with their own version of what it is, and they don't necessarily want to hear what everybody else has to say. It's very important for us to consider what education will be for little guys that are toddlers now, and how they're going to experience God and what God will mean in their lives in a world that is a dervish of controversy and all kinds of strange things happening. How does God deal with the unjust? What are the questions about life? What really is the foundation upon which you make a decision about an abortion? Where do you go for the value that's going to indicate to you the correct way to lead people politically in a system that demands that everyone participate and yet not everybody gets representation? What do we do with the questions that people live with every day? Where do gay people fit? Mormons are going through a big controversy right now about gay marriage. And being gay in a Mormon church is considered to be an apostate, ready for excommunication. A few years back, the Anglican Church went through all kinds of turmoil because they wanted to ordain their first woman. And it divided the church in half. And then came Bishop Robinson, the first consecrated gay bishop, and that divided them even more. And the Episcopal Church is still reeling from that reality. What do we do with all these things? Because all these things are part of religion. They're saying in the future, because there won't be any many clergy people, that the services and church are going to shift from clergy-oriented beings, where we are responsible and somehow held accountable for whatever, and become clergy-less and more organizationally run. You know how democracy works? It takes forever to get anything done. That's what's coming, because it's going to demand dialogue. And how do we deal with that reality? How are we going to take what we have known and allow ourselves to be changed in order to foster the future? Christianity will continue, but Christianity will be very different. And things that we hold sacred today may not be held sacred at all. Worship will be very, very different. Worship and music and worship will be very, very open to whoever happens to be here. No hymn books, none of those kind of things. Maybe more projection screens so you can watch the football game at the same time that you're doing worship. Maybe around coffee tables, who knows? But that's where the future is. It's not here. It's not in pews. In fact, I kind of fooled in my mind one night when we were talking about painting the church. I thought, really, looking to the future, we probably should get rid of all the pews. And I thought, well, that'll go over big. And maybe redesign the sanctuary, place it differently so that there's the focal point is somewhere in the middle. So we all kind of gather around and do something like that. And it should be really no carpeting. It should be probably floor kind of things where you can have dancing and parades and all kinds of things. And worship should have all the senses involved. Did you know that? Fern, before she left, this is very interesting. Fern, this is her first Sunday, not here, Fern. Our friend Fern is down in Florida, and it's good for her. But before she left, she wrote on an envelope, put it on my desk, and I read it, and it was a list of, she found it someplace in the bottom of some Bible, where it said all the senses of the human person should be involved in every worship service. Sight, sound, smell, touch, all those things should be part of it. And if you look at the rituals that have been really rich over the years, the centuries, there's incense, there are bells, there's trumpets, there's all kinds of musical instruments. There's lots of movement, there's parades back and forth. Palm Sunday, there's all those things. Children doing, you know, the Christmas nativity set, that whole thing. All of that is part of ritual. And so on Sunday morning, I thought, well, gee, maybe we could be maybe baking an apple pie in the oven so when you come in, it smells like apple pie. And we could do something with bread for on the Sundays we have communion, baking bread so the bread would come right from the oven to the table. And wouldn't it be nice if individuals took responsibility to do that? And somebody made the wine at home and, you know, brought that, and we shared that. And all these wonderful possibilities, you see, but not unless we are going to break down some of our barriers. The simple point is this, brothers and sisters. We are stewards of the church we have accepted and received. We take care of what we have, and we treasure what has been given to us. And we honor the people who gave it to us. But we also have to start thinking about the future. Not always are we going to be the same group. I'm not going to be here forever. In fact, I was just told the other day at a meeting of clergy that it's very, very serious that you never, 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 ever go back to where you once were a pastor. Never. Without exception. So once again, when we leave here, we'll be homeless. Again. But it's going to change. It's going to change. And that little one crying out there right now is probably going to be in the pews or somewhere in this building, hopefully, finding her way to God. And it's upon us to create a platform, to create the possibility and perhaps the atmosphere where that little girl and her brother and Tegan out there can really find God, because we did our job as stewards. So let us keep that in mind as we continue our lives together and continue to listen to the possibilities that surround us. Praise God, amen.